Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is an excellent one. We are interviewing Dr. Robin Rose. She is a double board certified specialist in gastroenterology and internal medicine, and she specializes in gut health and long COVID. I don't know about you guys, but I am fascinated to learn what COVID has done to us. We think we've recovered, but long COVID is a bitch. And we're going to find out all the things it can do to you. Robin is founder and CEO of Terrain Health, where she practices next generation precision healthcare. She integrates systems biology with an innovative approach. It requires a deep understanding of everyone's personal biochemical, genetic, and lifestyle factors. And this comprehensive approach really prioritizes patient-centered care. She's creating healthcare interventions every day that are much more precise and personalized and preventative. And this is really deeply rooted in her philosophy about healing patients from the inside out. The gut health is everything to keep you ageless. So, Robin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dr. K. I'm so excited to be with
I
you.
am thrilled. Robin
Yes.
is a longevity doc. She's in a special group of doctors, the longevity docs. And I think what you're going to teach us today about long COVID will be fascinating because I was shocked to hear that long COVID actually changes your aging trajectory and how fast you age. So tell me, what is long COVID and how has it impacted most of America?
Yeah, so one of the main drivers of post-COVID conditions is the spike protein. The spike protein from the virus actually acts as an age accelerant because it can access every single cell in our body. I don't know if if you've heard of this, Dr. K, but a lot of, in the beginning of the pandemic, it's all about the ACE2 receptor, the ACE2 receptor, but that's really just like a tiny, tiny speck of what's going on, because the spike protein can actually access over two dozen different host cell receptors in the body. So that's why it can impact every organ system. And that's why when people present with post-COVID conditions, they can present with a multitude of different signs and symptoms, right? So that's one of the main things I wanted to hit on. And unfortunately, and I know this can be a little bit of a heated political topic, but it should not be. But the spike protein from the vaccine has be we found behaves very similarly, and in some unfortunate individuals, they get similar signs and symptoms and conditions that results, from the spike protein, behaving the way it does in our body. The other major thing that people have to understand is that the virus, and we've been, screaming from the rooftops about this for the last few years, ever since the initial publications came out by Dr. Carlo Bronya and Simone Cristoni, that the virus is a bacteriophage. So what that means is that the virus invades the bacteria in our bodies, specifically the gut microbiome. So everyone's heard of the gut microbiome and the fact that we have trillions of organisms that are inhabiting that gut microbiome, but meant, mostly bacteria. And the virus gets inside these bacteria, and once they're inside, they take over the DNA machinery, and they start just multiplying. And if you look under an electron microscope, you'll see these bacteria teeming with hundreds, if not thousands, of virons. Okay. And once that happens, those bacteria start to throw off really nasty things. And they're called toxin-like peptides. Okay. And these toxin-like peptides can get into the blood circulation, and they travel, and they can damage any single organ system. The toxins might be cardiovascular toxins, or neurotoxins, or toxins that affect the kidney. But they basically can do widespread damage. And each person that we've tested, has their own unique blueprint. Like, there's about 300 to 400 different toxin-like peptides that have been identified, but each person has more, usually on average, like anywhere from 12 to 20 that are circulating. And unfortunately, many of these toxins are neurotoxic, and they really impact the brain. The other interesting thing that we found from our research, and this is all coming out in real time, and even just the last week or two, is that those phages in the gut, and they actually are responsible for throwing off spike protein fragments too. And that's why you have the perpetual production of these spike proteins in many of us. And then those spike proteins then go and they access other cells in the body. Okay. like complicated.
Yeah. But one thing I wanted to know is if those toxic peptides are persistent throughout all of the COVID infection. Is this just during infection or they linger long enough after?
No, they stay there post, they're there years for years post-infection.
Oh, they don't even
Until you rid the body. I'm sorry, my thing was not on do not disturb, and I don't know why
That's
I'm
okay.
shutting it off. Yes, it's on now. Okay. So they linger for months, if not years, and unless your body's able to rid yourself of the phages, the bacteriophages, which really you need specific treatment to do that, then they're there. And they're throwing off these peptides all the time. And I think it's just a matter of how well somebody detoxifies or not. You know, the epigenetics are going to play a really big role, right? Meaning like how you interact and adapt to the world around you and how well those, you know, genes or variations in your genes are working, right? To move things out of your body and so on and so forth. So I think that plays like a really big role too in why people manifest disease or not.
So what are the symptoms of long COVID? Like, how can you screen yourself and see if you do or don't have a little bit of
So,
long?
you
And
know,
can you have a little bit? Is there a spectrum of mild and severe?
it's a full spectrum. The bottom line is there's been 200 to 300 different signs and symptoms identified. And the main things that people always hear about is brain fog and chronic fatigue, post-exertional malaise, chronic headaches, head pressure. You know, different cardiovascular signs and symptoms, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, POTS, which everyone has heard a lot about, like and POTS, you know, can manifest in any which way because it's dysautonomia, right? So they have a dysregulated autonomic nervous system, anywhere from temperature dysregulation, you know, fluctuations that, you know, wide swings in their heart rate fluctuations, tachycardic, you know, meaning fast heart rate versus slow heart rate, which is bradycardia, high blood pressure or labile blood pressure, low swings in blood pressure, high swings in blood pressure.
For the audience, can you tell explain what POTS is for the
Yeah,
audience?
so post yeah, so it's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Okay.
But POTS is also a spectrum. So it's not just people that all of a sudden spontaneously get a fast heart rate out of nowhere, right? It's also they can have like they stand up, they get dizzy, they feel like they're gonna faint. But then on that spectrum is also like blood pressure fluctuations, temperature dysregulation, and that also overlaps with mast cell activation. I find that the two of them go hand in hand a lot of time. So the mast cells, you know, we've never seen so much mast cell activation in our life. Like prior to COVID, like no one, most doctors never even heard of it. And we're finding it in 80% or more of patients that present with post-COVID or post-vaccine conditions, they have underlying mast cell. And that's because the spike protein, well, I'll get into that in a second, but the mast cells basically are completely activated. There's widespread mast cell activation. And as a result, it also drives a lot of this dysautonomia or dysregulation in the autonomic nervous system. So when I say that, things that our bodies are used to automatically doing for us, right? Like controlling our temperature, controlling our blood pressure, controlling our heart rate, right? Controlling our emotions, things like that. Like it's not now. It's all off kilter, you know? And so these patients are really, really suffering because what should be happening automatically isn't, and it's all in disarray, that whole pathway. Those are two other big things that we see. Neuropathy, so neuropathic pain, people that have like numbness, tingling, right, in their extremities, feet, hands, things like that. Even people have neuropathic pain in their face. They are presenting with trigeminal neuralgia, which is your fifth cranial nerve that's taken out by the virus. I mean, Dr. K, create like you did. I've never seen zebras. Like, you know, you call it zebras when you're training it. Like we've never seen the things that we were never taught about half the things that I'm seeing in my practice. Like even if you got amazing training through your residency and internship and fellowships, like these are bizarre presentations because of how things are activated in the body, and it's almost like a mishmash of different things presenting all at once. So it's really difficult medicine, and you really have to understand immunology, cellular medicine, virology. These are all things that I had to commit myself to teaching, to learning and teaching myself over the last 4.5 years to like really understand what's going on with this disease process.
Wow. I think this is really revolutionary. It's changing healthcare a lot because, as you said, these zebra diagnoses is, I think the vast majority of internists don't know how to deal with them and don't know what to do with them. Patients are kind of left with the symptomatology that's very foggy and vague, and they don't know what to do with it.
Right. And the problem is in the conventional medical space, which I was a part of, and I love my colleagues and I have nothing bad to say about them, but we have to see 30 patients a day. We're practicing McMedicine. And when you move to more of a longevity functional medicine practice, you're able to spend a lot of time with those patients. So we do a much different intake, and we can build timelines with these patients. So, they're going, but when people go to the regular conventional doctor, they have like 15 minutes. The doctor thinks they sound crazy, right? And but if you really build a timeline, you'll see there's always, almost always, 9 out of 10 times, a temporal relationship between when they had the vaccine or the virus and they presented with their symptoms. It's very, and then they're like, oh my God, right, I had this right before this happened. And so many of these people were just healthy people, right? Just like living their life, so on and so forth. And I say this all the time, but you know this too, Dr. K, like we live in a toxic soup, right? So we're always exposed to all these different toxins, so on and so forth. And it's and I think that this biotoxin that we were now presented with, 2020 and on, it was sort of like that last little drop in the bucket for so many people, or they were just right here, already dealing with all of these different things bombarding them from the outside world. And then this was the last little sort of like straw that broke the camel's back. And I think it's really important too for people to understand that everyone's post-COVID or post-vax condition is different. There's no two people that really present the same. And I think what people don't realize too is that all these people, like young people that are being diagnosed with these turbo stage four cancers, right? Or cancers that were completely in remission, like for 10, 20 years, and now they're recurring, but they recur at stage four. People that are always sick constantly, or can't kick colds, or can't kick the flu within like a few days, or and they're lingering for weeks and weeks, or they're getting two or three infections at a time. People that are presenting with these bizarre autoimmune diseases out of nowhere. The young guy that, unfortunately died of sudden cardiac death or a heart attack. These young people presenting with strokes or TIAs. Like, we're seeing these things at astronomical numbers that we never really saw pre-pandemic, right? So you have to stop and think, could this be playing a role? Could the spike protein or these bacteriophages that I'm explaining, are they playing a role in the current, disease manifestation of this individual? It should start to become part of the differential diagnosis, when we're working up, especially some of these very bizarre cases and stories that patients are presenting with.
You mentioned that long COVID and COVID in general, the spike protein can rapidly age you. And this is shocking. And we need to learn more about it. Talk about the spike protein, what it does to our aging process and longevity overall.
So all of the evidence and research, and there's a ton of articles written on this already, show that once the spike protein gets inside the cell, it causes senescence. So you know that word. Everyone in the anti-aging world, all we're trying to do is prevent or reverse senescence, right? So I'll explain to everyone what that means. So as we age, right, we start to produce these senescent cells, right? And when you have senescent cells, it makes you basically not makes the senescent cells basically throw off all these different pro-inflammatory cytokines and, produce a lot of inflammation in our body, right? That's part of the inflammaging, word that we hear all the time. And so Senescence is what makes us age. It's why we start to wrinkle. It's why we're more prone to infectious and inflammatory diseases as we get older. It's why we're more prone to cancer. It's all these things because all the cells are becoming more senescent. And again, they can't function properly. So when you have a senescent cell, it's almost like a half dead zombie cell, I call it. And it's just wreaking havoc inside our body. So that's why a lot of people take senolytics, right? Or these compounds or vitamins called senolytics because they want to break up those senescent cells, and get rid of them and so on and so forth. Or that's why people do a lot of things to induce autophagy. That's another word, right? Like cleaning up the cell. Because if you can override the senescence, right? And it with autophagy, you can maybe save that cell. Right, so that it can go back to being a normal cell and stop doing all this bad stuff inside of us and causing all this inflammation. So what happens with spike protein is not only once the spike is inside the cell is it rendered a senescent cell, but it also overrides all of these mechanisms that induce autophagy. The studies show how the spike protein literally inhibits all these different things that are going to play a role in inducing autophagy to try to save that cell. Okay. So if the spike is inside those cells, that's it. It's done. And not only does it cause diffuse cellular senescence, but they have a huge affinity, the spike protein, for our immune cells and causing immune senescence. And again, that's why we're seeing so many people get reinfected with COVID over and over again. That's why we don't have a seasonality much to a lot of infections that we used to. Like we've become sort of depots, our bodies, for simple infections that we used to just fight off that we no longer can. I don't know if you noticed this in California, but like this past year, and even, well, particularly 2 winters ago, literally almost every 40 or 50-year-old I knew had RSV. And I was like, when do 40 and 50, like in my life practicing as a doctor, I never even heard of a case. Like, or maybe like a random case here or there, but the entire town had RSV, like the town surrounding me. So, what our bodies normally could fight off and what we have antibodies to, right, to recognize these things, it's no longer. We have very weakened immune systems. And I feel like a lot of people are going to listen to me and be like, oh my God, that's me. Because I have friends too. I mean, they're getting sick multiple times. They're getting flu, upper respiratory infection, but like boom, 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 like right after that. And they can't get over it. Right. And it has a lot to do with that. And then the immune senescence is also impacting how well we fight off cancer and why we're seeing this rise. We already were seeing a rise in cancer in younger people, but now even more than we ever have before. And again, why maybe we're seeing these recurrence. And there is evidence to show that these cells, these cancer cells, these immune, that they have spike protein. And they've even, Kevin McKernan had a case. He's like a famous, geneticist, and he's published a lot around this. But he basically showed a man that had advanced stage gastric cancer, stage 4 gastric cancer, and when they took the tissue, it was riddled with the spike protein. So, these are things that are coming out that we're learning more about, but we have to explore them more. And as a scientific community, we have to be open-minded about this and trying to really understand this because no one at this point has not been exposed, right? Pretty much 99% of the world's population has been exposed to the virus or the vaccine. And now you can take one part away, which would maybe be the vaccine, right? Because that's giving yourself spike protein, but many people are being exposed to the virus multiple times a year and getting it more than even once a year now. And so we believe my research group, the more exposure you have, you're also, it's like a cumulative effect, right? Because your body is so overburdened with this biotoxin, the spike protein, right? Or the phages that form in your gut, it can't keep up, And then eventually you start to manifest a lot of these bizarre symptoms and conditions that we're talking about.
That's so interesting. Are there tests that patients should be screening themselves with or doing to look at
So
the levels of spike protein?
a lot of what I do or created over the last 4 years is labs, or like I use like pattern recognition, I guess, like we look at a lot of advanced biomarkers, and collectively, when we look at these advanced biomarkers and you see patients that have a lot of these abnormalities in these specific biomarkers, you can probably, say that they're likely suffering from a post-COVID or post-vax condition. The problem is, Dr. K, is there's no way to actually, or no commercially available assay at this point to measure the spike protein directly. So what we're relying on are the antibodies. So if somebody had COVID or the vaccine, your body will make antibodies to the spike protein. So you'll see spike IgG antibodies, right? You had the virus, though, the actual wild type virus, your body will not only make antibodies to the spike protein, but also the N protein, or what we call the nucleocapsid protein. So that's one differentiator that you can say that you can do when you're looking at patients, because you can tell, like, oh, maybe this person had more recent disease. But what's happening is the a very large portion of the population is walking around with forever very elevated titers of spike protein, very, very high, like off the charts. And in a normal immune response, once you're exposed to something, whether it's, the vaccine, antigen, or the antigen from the actual virus, your body makes those antibodies, and then those antibodies naturally wane, right? From like the day after you're exposed, like they're waning, 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 right? And that's why people were told to get the vaccine every 6 months, because you don't have any more antibodies after that. But what's happening is people that haven't had the virus or the vaccine for years still have significantly elevated antibody titers. So now, is that a great test? No, because it's an indirect measure. And I just told you that most of us have spike protein lingering in our body, right? So if your immune system is seeing that spike protein over and over again, it's going to keep making antibodies. It doesn't mean that those antibodies are good. It doesn't mean that those antibodies, that they're neutralizing antibodies, and that they're going to actually help you fight off not getting another infection. That's why people keep getting infected over and over again, despite having those high antibody levels. So we're working, my research is work, my the re guys I work with in Italy, and the research we're doing, we're trying to hopefully at one point commercialize some of these assays so that people can measure the spike protein directly. But we're also able to look at where the spike protein lives, like what cells they live in, what immune cells they're living in. And we're also able to measure these toxin like peptides and see if that the people are, carrying these things. So we can measure, like, each person's, or identify each person's gut immune, unique gut immune blueprint and what they look like. And that could be helpful in the future, because then we can back in, to that knowledge and personalize people's treatments to really help them.
That kind of follows with some of the gut testing that we see that's out there, like Viome or, microbiology testing of the gut. Which of those gut tests do you think are good for patients to try and the benefit of doing them?
So I use the two I like most are the ones by Microbiome Labs, and Vibrant. I like shotgun sequencing, next generation sequencing of the gut microbiome, if you're going to do it. I don't like the PCR 16 DNAs testing, because that's not really as accurate. Like, you want to get a really deep dive, and cut really multiple cuts into the microbiome to see, what your unique microbial blueprint looks like. I used to use microbiome testing, gut microbiome testing, a lot in my practice. I don't use as much anymore, because I, at this point, I know it sounds awful, but most people's gut microbiomes are destroyed. So I am just cleaning it up the way I know how to clean it up through all, like, the work I've done and the training I've done. So I'm just, like, restoring, working hard to restore bifidobacteria to really, obviously restore diversity. Most people's diversity are completely destroyed. And Dr. Sabine Hazen, who's out by you in LA, she showed that, that the spike protein really destroys the bifidobacteria species, which is so important for our innate immune response. So I'm working on doing all that. And we know now that these bacteriophages are living in so many of us, right? And so really, you have to get rid of these phages and then rebuild the gut and restore health and balance to the gut microbiome. That's really what it's all about at this point.
You're just restoring population balance of the good
Yeah.
bacteria, and that way
Yeah.
you drown the bacteriophages, or are you doing some kind of ablative treatment
No.
to get rid of bacteria?
No. So the only thing that can kill the bacteriophages are specific antibiotics. So Carlo Brogna also, he's out of Italy. He published this, and he showed that using amoxicillin or Zithromax, if you're penallergic, plus or minus Xifaxan, which is, a non-absorbed antibiotic. Like, it's mostly, it just acts directly on the gut microbiome, and you eliminate, 99.6% of it, so it doesn't get systemically absorbed. So we use those to help kill the bacteriophages. But all of this is still being studied and ironed out to figure out what the best thing to do is, because obviously, as a gut microbiome specialist, that's the last thing I want to do is give antibiotics. But the
Yeah.
problem is the gut's already is already ground zero. It's such a disaster, right? That you're gonna have to, if you don't kill these off, you're not gonna get better. But the other on the other on the other hand, you're also destroying some of the good bacteria as well. And you have so, and most of these patients have so little of that. So
Yeah.
little of that.
And one course of antibiotics I was reading somewhere can destroy and ablate the entire gut microbiome for like up to a year. Is
Yeah.
that kind of
Yeah.
true? Just goes
Yeah. So
nuclear.
even, right, that's so true. So even one dose of Augmentin, forget about the full 10-day course, kills off thousands of the good bacteria. So imagine what you do exactly by exactly what you're saying if you do like a full, 10-day to 2-week course, and
Yeah.
you just kill off all the beautiful, good, friendly bacteria,
Yeah,
in addition
that's
to the bad.
crazy. So are you a big advocate of just taking a lot of prebiotics, probiotics, or what is the best way to restore the good bacteria for a regular bowel?
Yeah, so I
It's
use
a
a
very
ton
sick
of
person.
pre, yeah, I use a ton of pre, pro, and postbiotics. There's a lot of great things out there. I love postbiotics because prebiotics in general, if you get the patient eating right, and eating a really good diet, like all the colors of the rainbow, lots of variety, and each person's gut microbiome is so different, right? So each person's going to need different prebiotics to support their gut microbiome. So I love using diet, but of course, there's some great prebiotics on the market, like Microbiome Labs has a good one, and I think Ortho, like all of them have a bunch of the good brands, which are great to help support the person along. But eventually, really having a clean, good whole foods diet, well-rounded whole foods diet is great for the prebiotic part, right? Postbiotics are more, I mean, probiotics are, they're more like tourists, right? Like they taking them is not a bad thing, because when you take them, there's still some prebiotic in the probiotic that you're taking, because that bacteria has to live, right? And then once that gets into your gut, it is exerting some sort of metabolic effect on the gut microbiome. Now, are there some studies that some probiotics stick and can stick, right? Like their bifidobacteria sticks, their lactobacillus. Yeah, there are, but in the meat, but in for the most part, they're just like sort of traveling through and exerting their metabolic effects like on the gut, which isn't a bad thing, right? And then there's the postbiotics, which I think are the best things. The post because The reason why you take probiotics are to get the bacteria, or you want the good things that the bacteria are making, right? Which are the metabolites. That's what's making us healthy and keeping us healthy. It's the metabolites, which are the postbiotics. So if you could flood your body with all these beautiful postbiotics and take them on a regular basis while you're working on your gut microbiome, then most people, you usually feel really good. And it really helps them. So,
I think that's important for people to understand the distinction between prebiotic, probiotic, and postbiotic. Can you just give us a little primer on that?
yeah. So the prebiotic is the food that the bacteria live off of. So, people have heard they're all like these non-resistant starches. People have heard of kombucha, sauerkraut, fermented foods. Like, those all have beautiful things in them that help feed the gut microbiome. So those are what we call prebiotics. What else is there? Like artichoke, hickory. Like I can name a million different types of foods and things and the fibers, the non-resistant starches that help with that. Then the probiotic is the actual bacteria. That's the actual bacteria that you're giving yourself back. So people, when you eat yogurt, you'll see that there's all these different species in it, like Lactobacillus, bifidobacteria. Those are types of species or types of bacteria that live in your gut that, that if you have the right balance of them, you're going to feel better because having the right balance is giving you these what called metabolites. Those bacteria are producing things that we need in our body to help us with our metabolic health, our cardiovascular health, our brain health, all these different things. So that's why you want to make sure you have the right bacteria. And then the postbiotic are the metabolites, are the things that the bacteria are producing, that the good, healthy bacteria especially are producing that you want. So for example, like short chain fatty acids, people have heard of. So there's all different ones. And those short chain fatty acids also ex have a, a very powerful influence on our health. Again, like our metabolic health, our cardiovascular health, all these different things. So that's why, there's those three categories and they're all super important to balance, right? And to infuse into our life so that we are healthier. Don't know if
That's
that.
so important to understand. And some people say take up to five active live culture foods daily, like the fermented foods. So, what are your own gut practices? What do you do to have a sampling?
So it's funny. So right now with a lot of the patients that we're seeing because of the mast cell activation, I have to be super careful. That's one caveat. Like I love fermented foods, but they're super high in histamine. So people that have histamine intolerance, this is like a good point to bring up. You have to be really careful with those fermented foods. So the kombucha, the sauerkraut, the kefir, like all those different things. Once you balance out the gut microbiome, and you like get the mast cell under control, you can start introducing some of those foods, slowly but surely. And then that way you can sort of get those prebiotics. But also using all those different foods that we talked about before and the non-resistant starches and just eating all the colors of the rainbow and having like a whole foods clean diet, that is what I recommend mostly to support the gut microbiome. That is the best thing that you could do. Obviously, exercising also is going to make a huge impact on the gut microbiome and the health of the gut microbiome and moving and all those things. And because it's going to impact your vagus nerve and your vagal tone, which also influences the health of the gut microbiome, as well as sleep and having good sleep hygiene. So those are all really important. And also, managing stress and being mindful. And because when you have cortisol dysregulation, that until like I always tell many of my patients, like so many of them come in with such significant cortisol dysregulation. And until you really address the cortisol dysregulation, the gut microbiome will never fully be healed either. So these are all things you have to sort of like do in tandem, right? So that the gut can really heal.
It's a real challenge. And then so much of what's going on in your gut. So with leaky gut, we feel that that definitely impacts the entire body from the brain to, with anxiety, neuropsychiatric
Skin, under
disorder, your
skin.
skin. I definitely want to talk about skin. You
Yeah.
talk about glowing from the inside out. How does gut health show up on our face?
So when you're eating the wrong foods and you have a ton of inflammation and your gut microbiome's imbalanced and you just mentioned this leaky gut. Leaky gut means intestinal permeability, meaning the gut lining, is compromised. I usually explain to people that your gut lining is like the hole in the donut. It's everything from here to down there. So it's everything, in the middle. It's like the hole in the donut. And if aside from your skin, which you'll can attest to this, it is the largest organ system in our body that's exposed to the outside world, aside from the integumentary system, which is our skin. And so it's very, very vulnerable to everything that we are swallowing and breathing in on a daily basis. And if you actually took it and unfolded it, that lining and put it outside our body, it's the size. It's so funny. Some people say one full tennis court to two full tennis courts, but either way, that's a huge amount of surface area. And so, and the lining is actually only one hair width thick. That's it. So it's so easily compromised. And you want to keep all those cells of the lining, of the gut, like this, like super, super tight. But what happens is over time, the cells or what's called the junctions, right? They start to become separated. And that's what leaky gut is. And the problem with that is our digestive tract and that barrier is meant to help us do two things. It's meant to help us assimilate or absorb nutrients and vitamins and minerals, and then eliminate whatever comes through that shouldn't. But what happens with leaky gut is you're actually absorbing a lot of the bad things because you don't have this tight, secure barrier. So things are escaping into the bloodstream. So everything from viruses, different toxins, fungi, bacteria, and then even our undigested food, which is protein, which our body looks at as foreign. And over time, what happens is these things are escaping because, again, you don't have this tight gut lining like you should, and you have this low-grade chronic inflammatory response that's poking your immune system and doing bad things and showing up as inflammation in different parts of the body. And one of the main places is your skin. Okay. And so between the chronic low-grade inflammation coming from the gut, what you're eating, right? Certain antigen or foods provoke, how do I say it? Antigenic foods that are very provoking, like dairy and gluten and things like that. Again, because the leaky gut is going to really show up on your face. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. And also, what was I going to say? There was one other point I was going to make and I forgot. Darn it. Yeah. And even what happens is over time is that your gut microbiome is very intimately linked to your skin microbiome, and the bacteria living in your skin also start to change. And that's why you start to like break out or have acne or periodermatitis or other dermatitis, but that's why. So the gut is like really communicating and playing a huge role in not just the health of the skin, but the skin microbiome as well.
If someone wanted to improve their skin by healing their gut, what would be like the first three steps they should take?
Well, it's definitely to restore health and balance to a dysbiotic gut microbiome, meaning if you have too many unfriendly bacteria versus friendly, we want to balance that out and get the friendly back on track. So that you're making these metabolites that we talked about that are healthy, that are going to help our skin too, right? And also, a lot of those metabolites are really important for healing the gut lining, for getting that gut lining to heal up. So I would say for the skin, it's getting rid of like any of these really highly antigenic foods, like gluten, dairy, some of the other six allergens that we haven't mentioned. And then also doing things to help the gut microbiome, like we talked about before, like eating a whole foods, clean, all the colors of the rainbow diet, maybe sprinkling in some probiotics and really working on the postbiotics as well. And there's like a lot of postbiotics you can take that are on the market. And I think between that diet and working on your gut microbiome like that, like I use a peptide called lorazepam also, which is a very potent zonulin inhibitor. I use it all the time, especially for people that have any autoimmune issues, skin issues, things like that, that I know have leaky gut, because the lorazepam, it does a great job of getting those tight junctional proteins to form and to really help heal the gut back up. I also use other peptides like KPV, BPC 157. KPV is a natural TNF alpha inhibitor. It helps lower inflammation in the gut. BPC 157 is great also at healing leaky gut and restoring health and balance to the intestinal mucosal barrier of the gut. So I use a whole bu I don't know, I use a whole bunch of different things. I also like serum bovine immune globulins,
Oh,
really
okay,
great.
colostrum, like something similar to colostrum.
Or it's similar, or that's part of it, right? But like, the different, immunoglobulins that are going to help also with the leaky gut, and they also even help with increasing bifidobacteria species and lowering maybe some of the other bad species. Like, there's a lot of studies around that. So there's so many things in my toolbox that I'll use, like based on like how severe the patient's presenting, what's actually going on with them at the time of presentation, and so on and so forth.
Are you a believer with colostrum, or is that like
I
a
like colostrum. Yeah,
yeah, you think
I
it's helpful?
do. It's
Okay.
definitely helpful. It definitely helps a lot of people. It can play a nice role
Do you
in.
think menopause has some impact on the gut that we haven't talked about? I'm sure
Yeah.
it does. I'm
Oh
sure.
my God. Yes. Yes, it really, really does. I mean, I always say when my middle-aged women come to me, I call it like I show them this triangle. It's like gut hormone metabolic triangle. And there it's like a feed forward vicious cycle. And the problem is too, is especially in perimenopause and women being so out of whack and imbalanced, with their estrogen, and a lot of women, also have estrogen excess. It's because they don't have the right species living in the gut, to help them rid themselves of their estrogen. Okay. And so that plays a big role. So then the estrogen is being recirculated. You have estrogen excess. That's going to make you feel awful. That affects your skin. It does, all the things that we don't like. And I think too, as you live your life and the more things you're exposed to and the more antibiotics you've had and the more this and that, your gut microbiome becomes, more compromised. And so, and then that's also, and at the same time, your hormones are, also changing. And the gut microbiome plays a big role in really helping you, again, control or keep these hormones in balance on many levels. So,
Interesting.
yeah.
We're really big on longevity and biohacking. What are some of your favorite biohacking habits or gut-centered longevity tips that you follow?
Okay, so what are some of my biohacks? Well, I know this is so ridiculous, but one of my hacks is I really tell everyone to sweat,
Oh,
because
I love that.
I
Yeah.
think we're so riddled with so many toxins, and especially talking about long COVID, that I really believe, I feel like my patients that, work out the most, get themselves sweating the most. And I'm not saying you have to go run a marathon, because also that's another thing. Middle-aged people should be really lifting a lot more, right? And doing resistance training and building skeletal muscle, lean muscle mass, and all those things. So, but I just feel like sweating, like getting yourself to sweat, whether it's pumping, whether you're doing a quick HIIT train, getting into a sauna, all those things, I think is so important. And I think so many people don't sweat. And I think that that really adds to not getting rid of, my friend Carrie Jones. She's a naturopath. She's in the hormone space. I love her.
I love her.
She
She's
taught
great.
me, you know what she taught me? She taught me this word when I used to train with her back years ago. Emunctories, right? Like, we have four emunctories, and your four, that's how you get rid of, how you move things out of your body. And it's like pooping, peeing, sweating, and respiring. And I feel like so many of us forget about the respiring and the sweating part. And if you can get that into your daily routine, or like even a few times a week, I feel like that can really impact your health.
I
And
think that's so true.
how did you feel?
Well, if you could put a billboard in Times Square with a message for gut health for all of the world to see, what would it say? What would it teach us? It's a hard one, but it's a good
I would say I use this all the time, but it's like, I'm stealing it from Hippocrates, but I always say all disease begins in the gut, or at least 95% of disease begins in the gut. It really does.
Wow.
And if people took their gut health a little bit more seriously, and if doctors knew how to deal with restoring health and balance of the gut microbiome, and really working that up front with a lot of patients, I feel like so many people would be so much healthier.
Yeah,
Because,
that's a simple.
I always say, I do say this, I say this to my patients too. I'm like, well, unless you're a cow and you eat grass all day and you're pasture raised and you live in a bubble, then you're going to have a compromised gut microbiome. Like, all of us have some element of dysbiosis, and all of us have some element of leaky gut because everything we do, Dr. K, from drinking tap water, drinking alcohol, taking nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories for a headache like Motrin, Aleve, eating, unrefined, I mean, not eating refined sugar, eating, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm telling you, I have COVID brain lately. Foods. What are the like
Gluten and carbs, sugar.
gluten, carbs, sugar. What type of meat is? Oh, processed, ultra processed foods. That's what I was looking for. Ultra
Yeah, ultra
processed
processed
foods.
foods. Yeah.
Just being stressed. All these things, like taking one antibiotic, like we just said, forget about the course. All of this destroys the gut microbiome, the gut bacteria, and the intestinal mucosal barrier on a daily basis. So that gut is always in a constant state, of it's very dynamic, right? It's like here, there, here, it's all over the place. So we have to do a really good job of like taking care of this gut on a daily basis and feeding the bacteria the right things they need and doing the things that we need to do in our everyday life to support that gut microbiome.
That's a beautiful message to end on. I can't thank you enough for that's such a great primer on long COVID and on gut health. Where can people learn more? I know you have your own teaching platform, and I think people should come and visit you if they're really suffering. Terrain Health sounds amazing. Tell us
Oh,
where they
thank
can
you.
find you and how to connect.
So my website is terrainhealth.org. So TERAN, terrain and then health.org. And then Instagram, I'm Dr. DR period Robin Rose. And I think I'm on that on Twitter, on in X also, not Twitter, X. And then my Facebook is just Dr. Robin Rose without the period after the doctor. But that's where they can find me. But I was gonna say too, we're doing a big, I was gonna, I wanna do, I was like, I hope maybe you'll come. We're doing a really big longevity / long COVID conference with New BioAge, with the guys from New BioAge in September. And Betsy and Cynthia, like all of them are talking and it's
I
gonna be
will
great.
come just to
And
hang
it's,
out with you
yeah, and like
guys.
I would love it. It's like a 2-day conference. It's the weekend of like September 12th, 11th, 12th, something like that. But anyway, people could like, we're really going to do such a deep dive into all of this. And, so people can know what labs to start checking and the different diagnostics and how to start treating and just how to start recognizing it and all these other advanced treatments that people can start implementing and using also. But what's so cool is like a lot of these things that we do for long COVID apply to all these different chronic diseases. So it's sort of nice to be able to take this like deep dive into like longevity and long COVID, and really from like a cellular medicine standpoint. So it will be really, really great, I feel like, to,
Well,
come to
great.
that.
When that comes up, you have to send me more
I
information.
am. I want you to
Yeah.
come. You have to come hang out with me and Betsy.
I love that so much. Well, it's been such a pleasure chatting. You guys definitely check out Dr. Robin Rose and Terrain Health, and I encourage everyone to take a look at your diet and see what you're putting in to yourself, because honestly, gut health is transformative. When you fix your gut, you almost fix all your organ systems. So that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same. It's beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our really top-notch and brand new line. It's peptide-based skincare with NAD precursors and products that boost mitochondrial health of the skin. So can't wait to send you some, Robin.
Love that.
And whenever you're in LA, you got to come visit.
I'm coming.
We're going to do some exosomes, polynucleotides, and all the cool things. Love it. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.